The Aborigines from down under call it dream time. It's kind of the timeless time beyond the linear time of past, present, and future. It's like the super present, timeless time. In the Dzogchen tradition of Tibet, the natural Buddha tradition of Tibet, Dzogchen, we call it the fourth time. That includes past, present, and future, the timeless time, the eternal now, the eternal moment. The Aboriginals say it's in the dream time that you meet the ancestors, that you meet the gods. That's where they live. That's beyond birth and death. That's where we can encounter them too. Therefore, in dreams, we can encounter these beings. We can learn how to make these encounters happen. We can experience these things for ourselves. I remember Samuel Taylor Coleridge, author of The Rime of the Ancient Mariner and so many poems, wrote, "What if you slept? And what if in your sleep you dreamed? And what if in your dream you went to heaven? And there you plucked a strange and beautiful flower? And what if when you awoke, you had the flower in your hand? Ah, what then?" What then indeed? There are many stories in the oral teaching literature of Tibetan tradition. My own lamas have told me how themselves or their gurus had incredible blessed dreams and visions of masters of old, like the lotus guru Padmasambhava, or the great yogi and poet, cave-dwelling Milarepa, or of the female master of our lineage, the ocean of wisdom, Yeshe Sogyal. And these masters gave them empowerments and initiations and teachings and instructions in their dreams, and handed over to them a crystal ball full of infinite spiritual teachings, or a bell and a lightning scepter, symbolic of the union of wisdom and compassion, handed it over to them and said, "Now this is yours. This transmission of lineage is yours." And in the dream, they felt blessed and empowered and full of bliss and certainty. And when they woke up, in some cases, those holy objects, those sacred objects, were actually there on the table in front of them. Many lamas have told me these stories. I myself had a dream like that. My own late guru, the 16th Buddha Karmapa, who now lives in Tibet, he's been reborn there. But he died in 1983 in Illinois. He was one of the greatest Tibetan lamas of his time, the man of action, Karmapa. He came to me in a dream when I was in our 3-year retreat in my Tibetan monastery. And I was sitting up in my box at night. We didn't have a bed. We sat up to meditate, practice the dream yoga. And he came to me in a dream after he had died. And he told me where he was going to be reborn, on the 8th day of the 8th month in a northern island. And he gave me a phone number. And he wrote it down in a piece of paper and handed it to me. And when I woke up in the morning, I was so thrilled, I was so excited. I had seen the Karmapa and I knew where he was going to be reborn. And I looked for the paper everywhere and I couldn't find it and I was so frustrated. And I went to my teacher, Kempo Rinpoche, in our 3-year retreat center and I said, "Rinpoche, I had a dream." And he said, "Tell me." I said, "I had a wonderful dream, wonderful dream." And I told him the dream. And usually the Lama would say, "Oh, it's just a dream, go back in your room and keep meditating." But spiritual teachers never do what you expect, the Lama said to me. "So, what's the phone number?" Which, of course, I didn't have. So, anyway, in good time, the Karmapa was reborn. He didn't need me to call anyway and tell anybody anything. And, in fact, he was reborn around that time that had come into my dream. So, even you or I have these kind of special dreams. The question is, how aware are we of them? What do they mean to us? What can we do with them? And how can we develop and increase them? In Tibetan dream yoga, which we're studying today, we can learn how to develop and increase them, how to fly to go and visit our masters, even if they're not in the same country, how we can go back in time and meet the sages or saints we'd like to meet, how we can increase phenomena, how we can feed the world, how we can rain flowers or make a downpour of blessings and elixir over everyone in our dreams as a way of practicing great generosity or receiving spiritual teachings in the waking state. We all know about biblical dreams, like Jacob had a ladder with the angels going up and down, which he realized in his heart meant that he lived in God's house. And another dream where Jacob wrestled with the angels, just like we do, wrestling with our angels and demons in life. One day I had another dream about the glorious Karmapa, the Buddha Karmapa. On his deathbed, he died in Illinois while I was in retreat in our monastery in southern France. But that night, I didn't know he had died, of course, because there was no news in our monastery for several days about it. Karmapa was lying down on his right side with his right hand under his right ear, like the sleeping Buddha, reclining Buddha statues, based on the image of the Buddha, how the Buddha laid down and passed away under a tree in Kushinagar, northern India, 2,500 years ago. And Karmapa was in that position, which in fact is the dream yoga position we're going to learn later in the program for going to sleep at night. And I was sitting, kneeling on the floor in front of his deathbed, as I had many times when I had visited him. And his eyes looked right into my eyes, and his eyes dissolved into mine and into blissful light. And everything went poof. I felt like rushing, speeding right into the light and dissolving into it. And I was gone, and yet I was never more there. And I realized that although his body had died, the real guru, the real light, can never be born and die, and in fact had been transmitted into me. It was like if you cut a rosary, you cut the string of a rosary and the beads go everywhere. The rosary is gone, but each of us disciples got one bead in our heart. I remember another night I was dreaming, and one of the ancient masters, the great gentleman, Jusari master, the wisdom master, Jamgon Kantrol, appeared in my dream. And it was one of the longest dreams I ever had. That's why I'm telling you, we have all these different kinds of dreams. I know you do too. And you can have even more of them. And he taught me, and I still remember the name of this text, this secret oral pith instruction of Mahamudra, the teachings on ultimate reality in Tibetan Buddhism, called the 18 secret oral pith instructions of Mahamudra of ultimate reality. And I wrote them down, and I had all 18, and it was like one of those dreams, it seems like it went on all night. And when I woke up in the morning, I couldn't remember any of them. But to this day, 18 or 19 years later, I still remember the title of that teaching, the 18 Secret Oral Pith Instructions about Ultimate Reality, which now I'm transmitting to you in the manner that I received, like a seed into your own subconscious, where I'm sure it will grow and flourish. And if you can remember them, please write them down and email them to me. So in this way, we all have these magical kind of intercourse, back and forth, the merging of the minds. In Buddhism, we call it mind-to-mind or heart-to-heart transmission. It's kind of like a Vulcan mind meld, where we tune in on a deeper level in dream time, in the ego shadow zones, where the ego is much looser. In dream, we don't have that thick corporeal body, the gross body that keeps us down. So we can fly. We can become a dolphin or a waterfall. We can do anything in dreams. I remember Namkhai Norbu Rinpoche, a great Tibetan Lama of the Dzogchen lineage who lives in Italy and teaches in America sometimes. One of his main teachings is the 36 dances of the Dakinis. He received these in dreams, a long series of dreams, night after night. Fortunately, maybe this is the difference between a great Lama and the rest of us. He remembered them, and he teaches them to us. I've been involved with the nightmare, the bad dream of refugees in Asia for a long time. I worked for the Cambodian boat people and refugees. I taught English and lived in Tibetan refugee camps in Nepal and India for quite a number of years in the 70s. And many of my Tibetan friends went through horrendous experiences like a nightmare. But one of my friends, Lama Norla, who lives in New York, who I brought to America in 1976, tells the story of how he escaped from prison in China. He and his monk buddies were imprisoned when China conquered Tibet in 1959. They were in a makeshift concentration camp kind of place. in Chinese army tents, surrounded by barbed wire, in the middle of nowhere in Tibet. With hardly any rations, they weren't allowed to practice their prayers and religion. They were locked up and they had some physical work to do every day, crushing rocks to lay gravel on a roadbed for Chinese army trucks to use. And one night, Lama Nuo tells me, he dreams of his guru, his precious late deceased guru, who tells him if they creep out under the flap and go under the barbed wire, if they creep out at night, at a certain time, in a certain direction, that the Chinese sentries over there will be asleep. And they'll be able to escape from Tibet. And Lama Nuala could hardly believe it, but, you know, sometimes dreams are more real than reality. I can attest to that. As I was saying before, when I met the Karmapan dreams and he dissolved into me through my eyes, that was more real than sometimes just seeing him on an everyday basis in India or traveling with him in America. So Lama Nuala, in the morning, he thought about this and he rounded up four of his friends, his monk friends, and that night they crept out of that tent in the northeast flap and out under the barbed wire, and the sentries on both sides were asleep, and they walked all the way to Bhutan and ended up in India. Isn't that amazing? So in that way, our spiritual masters and guides and the saints and sages of old can help give us guidance and direction in dreams. This is one of the great functions of dreams. We're more open to receiving guidance and direction in them. It's not just that in dreams we're not so burdened by our gross physical body, but we're not so burdened by our usual rational, intellectual, skeptical minds. And these messages, these letters from the subconscious or from the divine transcendent dimension of reality can penetrate these sheaths of our inner being. These are not just stories that happen in Tibet, although the literature is full of such stories. I remember when Lama Nuala and I, who we lived together in Darjeeling for some years in his hermitage there above Kala Rinpoche's monastery in the hill stations and the tea estates of Darjeeling in northeastern India, in the early 70s. Some of the lamas were invited to teach and take up residence in Buddhist centers, Tibetan Buddhist centers of our tradition in France and America. So in 1976, I went and helped escort and translate for some of them. And Lama Nuala and I got to New York around Thanksgiving in 76. And then in 1977, to Woodstock, New York. And Lama Nuala had a dream one night staying at my house there in Woodstock, New York, on the flanks of Meade Mountain, the main mountain there, Mount Guardian, overlooking Woodstock, New York. He dreamt of his Dharma protector, the little white elephant deity, who said there would be a great seat of the Karmapa's lineage on top of that mountain. So the next day, he told me about it, and we walked up there. And lo and behold, there was a huge old inn called the Meade Mountain House where people like President Ulysses S. Grant had stayed 100 years ago. And it was for sale for a mere $200,000. Not the kind of money we had, but it was for sale. And Lama Nuala had been guided to it by his dream. And a few months later, when the glorious Buddha Karmapa Lama came to New York on one of his world teaching tours, we invited him to Woodstock and he stayed with us and went up and looked at that place and it became his monastic seat, his main center in North America, KTD Monastery, there to this day. You see, we all have these kind of dreams or experiences or aspirations or little epiphanies in life or beautiful moments when we are most connected to the divine, to the sacred, even in everyday life, not necessarily in some fantastically spiritual context, but we overlook it. If we could glean these insights from those experiences, we could gain the wisdom of elders, even as little Teresa did at the age of 23. Everybody has many experiences. Experiences are like dreams. They come and go. But to gain the wisdom of elders, we need to reflect upon these experiences, contemplate them, awaken to their meanings. Then we gain the wisdom of experience. One of my favorite stories, and the storytelling tradition of the Hasidic Jews is really marvelous. There are hundreds of wonderful Zen Buddhist stories and Tibetan teaching tales. In fact, I've collected many of them in my books. But I love the Hasidic teaching tales. It must be the Jewish blood in me that sings when I hear these stories. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov was one of the great Hasidic storytellers. And this kind of teaching tale appears in many traditions, just to change the names. It's the famous story of looking for treasure under the bridge in Prague. An old Hasidic rabbi told me, the late Rabbi Shlomo, a dear friend of mine, and a great storyteller and singer and minstrel, as well as a learned man, told me the tale of the impoverished Rabbi Isaac of Krakow. Rabbi Isaac had had recurring dreams that under a certain bridge leading to the king's palace in Prague, there was a great treasure meant for him, Rabbi Isaac, to find and to use to build a synagogue to God's glory. If he could only journey there many days away, he could dig up the buried treasure and provide a spiritual sanctuary for his impoverished neighbors in Krakow. Eventually, although the rabbi's wife chided him as a fool, telling him that his treasure was in his own household, Rabbi Isaac felt compelled to make the journey. He found the great bridge spanning the river just as in his dream and leading right to the royal palace in Prague. But Rabbi Isaac could not dig for the treasure because the vital bridge was guarded by sentries day and night. Finally, after several days, a kind-hearted armed guard guarding the bridge noticed the old rabbi and asked what he was doing hanging around there every day with a shovel in hand at a bridge. Rabbi Isaac saw something honest in the man's face, and through the grace of God, he entrusted this guard with the secret of the recurring dream which had brought him, Rabbi Isaac, all the way from Krakow on foot to Prague. The guard burst out laughing. "How could you have such faith in mere dreams?" he roared. "If I myself believed in dreams, I would have to go right now all the way to Krakow, because many years ago I used to dream continuously that there was a royal ransom treasure buried beneath the hearth of some poor miserable Jew named Rabbi Isaac in Krakow." Rabbi Isaac recognized God's sign to him. He took up his shovel. He said thank you to the guard, who never knew his name, that he was Rabbi Isaac. And he returned home, walking as fast as he could, day and night. His wife thought he was a fool, but he dug under their hearth, saying, "You told me that my treasure was in my own house." And Rabbi Isaac dug up the treasure that was in fact buried beneath their hearth. With this provenance, he built the famous Rabbi Isaac Synagogue in Krakow. There are so many delightful meanings we can read into this story, this dream. How the rabbi's wife had told him from the beginning, "Your treasure is in your old household." But who can understand such a direct message? Sometimes we have to make a long journey and hear it from somebody that we don't know in order to be redirected to find it beneath our own hearth. In the same way, if we plumb our own inner depths, we'll find our own inner treasure, treasures of spirit, treasures of wisdom and love and truth, treasures of our own innate sanity and authenticity and genuineness. This is not a mere dream. This is the kind of dream that changes the world. I have this dream for you. I have this dream for us all. Travel broadens the mind, no doubt. Pilgrimage nourishes the soul. But it is all beneath our own hearth at home, in our own household, in our own hearts. Everything we seek is within. Whether we say the kingdom of God is within, as the good book says, or as Buddhists say that nirvana is right within the here and now, it's not elsewhere. We can dig deep. We can wake up. We can bring that treasure from the darks of our unconscious into the light. This is a dream that I have for you and for me.